Welcome to Contemporary American History.
Is your website purdy?
Mind your business.
Does it work right?
Mind your business.
Can people find it?
Say it! Mind your business.
If you answered no, or kinda, to any of these questions, you came to the right podcast, because we're going to help you mind your business. Here's your host, the lexical cognizant and SEO director guy of Mind Development and Design, Mark Boyd.
Welcome to this week's Mind Your Business podcast, presented by the Minds at Mind Development and Design, and dedicated to all of you who are sick of yet another Google algorithm change. Mostly in general, but don't forget that the latest Panda update continues to roll out, even as we speak. Yep. Thank you, Whiff Roasters in Lititz, Pennsylvania, for my favorite coffee ever. Thank you for listening on iTunes and for listening to us on Stitcher. Thanks for the love on Pinterest. Make sure you drop us a line on Facebook or on our website if you have a question that you want us to answer on a future podcast. As for today, we've got a gaggle about Google. That's what we got for you. I said at the beginning of the year that I was not going to rely on Google every week on this podcast for information and material that I share with you. One, that would be too easy, and it would be boring after a while, trust me. There's always something going on, but it usually involves a lot of speculation, and I don't want to waste your time with that. I don't waste my own time with too much speculation. It is fun to look at trends and see essentially the direction that things are going and pick up on bits and pieces of what Google shares with us. But too much speculation just is not a good thing. So every now and then, enough will be happening to where it warrants a show about the latest Google goings on. Well, here we are. Excited yet? We're talking Google and what's up with this Alphabet Inc. deal. We're talking a little Panda update. We're talking Google Local update. We're talking doublespeak and read between the lines with Google's own John Mueller. So let's get talking. First off, a quickie for you. The aforementioned update to Google Local. You know how Google was listing the top 7 Google Local map results in a box right next to the map on the first results page? Well, Google has shortened that listing to 3. It's no longer 7 there. I can hear you groaning from here, and this is a recording for Pete's sake. They shortened the number of listings in the box to 3, and there is now a See More button that expands the box back to 7 listings when you click it. So really, maybe not a huge deal. It is still one of those nags, you know. The immediate visibility of 4 of the top 7 has been erased. They're not gone. One click brings them back, but their immediate visibility is non-existent, and that really stinks if you're one of those 4. If you're one of those other 3, you got to be loving it. But if you're one of those 4, it kind of takes a little mojo away from you. Secondly, another quickie. Just a reminder that, as I mentioned at the top of the podcast here, the latest Google Panda update continues to roll out as we speak. Now remember, Panda is the algorithm change that targets thin content. Remember to write for your readers. Give them a clear and concise information without information overload. 350 words is a good, reasonable word count to set as your standard on any given page. And granted, the search engines don't actually count words, but 350 words is a good, reasonable word count so that the search engines can tell you're putting effort into your writing. Remember, if you publish helpful articles regularly with accurate information, you earn trust with your readers and you earn trust with Google. Thirdly, another quickie. Proper linking is not as powerful as it once was for your SEO mojo. We've been knowing that for the last few years. But Moz's 2015 Search Engine Ranking Factors report shows that both links and anchor text are still more important than most other SEO factors individually. See, it used to be links was the big deal in SEO. And as links have lost some of their vitality in the big picture, as in they don't dominate, 60-70% of the SEO equation, they still are very important. It's just there are more factors that Google is including in their algorithm. It's not just linking and content. You got your social signals and everything else there now. And we're going to dive further into that in a week or two. That will be an interesting show. See? That number three, that was nothing but a shameless teaser. Now four, I didn't originally plan on counting, but I'm just rolling with it. Fourthly, now we're going to the meat and potatoes. Google is now part of Alphabet Inc. Google is part of another company, a larger company. This is particularly interesting because it really means nothing in the immediate sense anyway to 90% of you. The other 10% of you are either investors or just really, really curious. I count myself among the really, really curious because, well, I'm not an investor. As always, there's a lot of techno mumbo jumbo and business speak flying through the air all over the news. And I'm going to break it down for you. What this means, Google now being a part of Alphabet Inc., what this means literally is that Google is, and I quote, the largest subsidiary of a newly created holding company named Alphabet. Other enterprises under the Google umbrella, like the home automation division Nest, also become a part of Alphabet. Everything happens for a reason, folks. Everything happens for a reason. I believe that, especially in the world of business. Especially in the world of business concerning a business of this magnitude. Billions upon billions of dollars. A move this big has to have some compelling reasons. And this one certainly does. How many of you are wondering what a holding company is? Yeah, I was too. I mean, I knew that it had something to do with being an umbrella sort of company, but what does that mean for all the companies underneath it? Is a holding company merely a holder of other companies? Actually, there's little more to it than that. This could work out really well for Google and for the companies underneath it. First of all, the obvious. If Google is now a subsidiary of Alphabet Inc., then all of the companies under the Google umbrella also become part of Alphabet. Now, this is where the holding company part of it comes in. According to Wikipedia, this is the definition straight out of Wikipedia. A holding company is a company that owns other companies' outstanding stock. The term usually refers to a company that does not produce goods or services itself. Rather, its purpose is to own shares of other companies to form a corporate group. Holding companies allow the reduction of risk for the owners and can allow the ownership and control of a number of different companies. That last sentence of the definition is key. Holding companies allow the reduction of risk for the owners and can allow the ownership and control of a number of different companies. Okay. A holding company exists for no other reason than to own shares of other companies and form a corporate group. Period. That's it. What this does is it allows for the reduction of risk for the owners of the individual companies, which helps facilitate the research and development that the smaller companies are doing, such as Google X, Google Glass, Calico, Google Ventures, Google Capital. The list is seemingly endless. So basically what we have is we've got this new conglomerate, Alphabet Inc., and Google co-founders Larry Page and Sergey Brin are going to oversee this new Alphabet Inc. conglomerate. And Google's current vice president will become Google's new CEO. Yep. The co-founders of Google are now the overlords of the new over company, Alphabet Inc. Convenient, yes? Yes, this will open up freedom with less risk for Google's subsidiary research and development companies. There you go. The money has to come from somewhere for research and development, and you know, this is basically a case of pooling resources together. So there you go. I'm sure you'll sleep better tonight knowing that. I know I will. And finally, one of my favorite hobbies. Seriously, I get really caught up in this. This is interesting stuff. One of my favorite hobbies is interpreting business doublespeak, the reading of the space between the lines, if you will. I really started getting back into this when Bill Parcells was the coach of the New York Jets. I've always been fascinated with Parcells and how he manipulates the media, and I'll never forget. I couldn't tell you what year it was, but I remember it was when he was coaching the Jets, and he had a quarterback named Glenn Foley. And Glenn Foley was, you know, a young up and coming quarterback, and there were a lot of people who thought that he was a good legitimate starter. He didn't turn out to be, but I'll never forget Bill Parcells being asked in a press conference about this quarterback, Foley. And he says, this is at the beginning, this is like maybe after the third preseason game, and the Jets still had not decided on a starting quarterback. He said, "The thing I like about Foley is he knows where the end zone is, and he wants to get the ball there." And I remember when I heard him say that, just something clicked, and I just laughed. Because I thought, if you're a quarterback and the best thing that your coach can say about you is that you know where the end zone is and you want to get the ball there, that doesn't say a lot about what the coach thinks of your skill set. But here's a coach who's not going to go out there and just, you know, berate, say, you know, I'm not happy with my quarterback, with what he's doing, blah, 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 blah. He's going to go out there, and the best thing he can come up with is that he knows where the end zone is and he wants to get the ball there. Needless to say, Foley wound up not lasting very long as the Jets starting quarterback. But it was fascinating to me that reading between the lines you had to do there. And that's a pretty easy example. But in business, with Google, it used to be Matt Cutts. Now the face and spokesperson for Google in the marketing and SEO arena is John Mueller. Now, both Cutts and Mueller are adept as double speakers, and it's kind of fun to read between the lines when they're faced with questions about aspects of the Google algorithm that they just can't go into detail about. Although they indeed can't go into detail about algorithm specifics, duh, they regularly leave clues about what you should be doing. Recently in a video, Mueller answered a question from a webmaster in interesting fashion. The webmaster was asking if the Google algorithm counts users filling out a contact form or time users spend reading a blog article as positive ranking factors. I'll repeat that. I want to make sure that I'll repeat it again, make sure that it's making sense to you, because it is kind of weirdly worded. But the webmaster was asking Google representative John Mueller if the Google algorithm counts users filling out a contact form or the time users spend reading a blog article as positive ranking factors in their algorithm. An interesting question, a nice specific question, and Mueller's answer included this, quote, "In general, I don't think we even see what people are doing on your website, if they are filling out forms or not, if they are converting and actually buying something. So if we can't see that, then it's something we can't take into account," unquote. He went on to say this, quote, "Of course, if people are going to your website and filling out forms or signing up for your newsletter or service, then that's a sign you're doing the right things. We'll come back to that. He goes on to say, quote, I'd see that as a positive thing in general, but I wouldn't assume it is something that Google would pick up as a ranking factor and use to kind of promote your website in search automatically. I love the wording on this. We'll start our interpretation at the end and work backward. First, and this is just great, he has to put us all in our place and remind us that organic ranking with Google and any of the search engines is basically regarded as free advertising in their eyes. That's why they make us work so hard for it. Now, obviously, if you're running a business, you don't necessarily have time to do high-level SEO, right? And you're probably paying somebody to do that for you. So you're thinking, well, it's not really free advertising. And in that respect, no, it's not. But from Google and Yahoo's standpoint, it's not something that they are charging you for, organic ranking. They regard it as free advertising in their eyes, and that's why they make us work so hard for it. Hell, that's why Yahoo started monetizing their search results back in the day, which of course ended in a disaster for them as everyone lost trust in their results. But you can kind of see why they did it. Organic search is a kind of free advertising, and let's face it, back then, no one knew what they were doing, especially when it came to monetizing on the internet. So remember, folks, your organic ranking really is a kind of advertising. Secondly, if people are going to your website, this is what he said, if people are going to your website, filling out forms, signing up for your newsletter, that is a sign that you are doing the right things. Unquote. Doing the right things. I love the use of that. Matt Cutts did the same thing. Those right things usually include some real measurable factors like solid content, not thin content, consistent blogging and social media broadcasting, proper on-site optimization, when you link, the way you link, proper linking, all of those factors that led to people finding your site and interacting. So what we find out is that Google really can't incorporate your goal conversions into their algorithm without invading your privacy, since those things can be set up for tracking at Google Analytics, the capability is there, but it would be a breach of trust. So Mueller is reminding us that Google measures all of the factors that lead up to people filling out your contact form, etc. Comments on your blog post and social media, that's another story altogether, because that info is public anyway, so that can factor in as well. Third and finally, the very first thing he said was he didn't think Google saw what people are doing on your website. Specifically, if they are filling out forms or are converting and actually buying something. He said that he went on to say that if they can't see that, well, how could they factor it into the algorithm? They can't. That's true. However, there's a reason for Google beginning to factor in social signals and actual engagement on your website, i.e. comments on your blog. This is why I've been harping all year on the fact that 2015 is the year of engagement. Google may not be able to automatically see your end result, but they know what the correct and proper behaviors that lead to engagement and therefore conversions really is. And that's what they'll measure your website ranking on. Do right by your visitors. Do right by your audience, your alpha audience, and you will naturally be on the right path for weathering the SEO storms that so many other businesses fret over. Thank you for listening to this Google-licious edition of the Mind Your Business podcast, breaking business on the internet down like Darren's dance grooves. Thank you, Whiff Roasters in Lititz, Pennsylvania. Coffee and chicory, two great tastes that taste great together and keep you awake. Thank you for listening on iTunes and Stitcher. Thank you for following us on Pinterest. Drop us a line on Facebook or our Ask a Question page, and we'll be happy to answer your questions on a future podcast. Thanks again for listening. See you next week.
From the minds at Mind Development and Design, thank you for joining us today. Until next week, make sure you Mind Your Business.
I'm going to be watching you.
Huh?
You should sleep late, man. It's just much easier on your constitution.